Okay, good evening. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Tim and I am an alcoholic. Got a few things to go before we get started. Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. Permissions are set in Zoom so that anyone may show captions to get a real-time transcription of what is being said at the meeting. For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Action Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms. The restrooms are over to my left in the hallway. Let's see, newcomers. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you on Zoom. You can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessarily moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing the first part of step one, and please welcome our panel this evening, Bobby and Morgan. Right, and I will read the first paragraph we'll start with on step one will be on XXBI of the big book. We admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. So this is we have five parts to this. In the first part, the physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement, which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of an alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or we were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcoholics interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little, but as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. And I think, Bobby, you're going to go first.
Yeah, my name is Bobby. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bobby.
thanks for asking me to come tonight. Part of my experience coming into AA was that the telltale sign that I was an alcoholic is I refused to say that I was an alcoholic. And if you're an alcoholic who is still drinking, that's not really funny. I did not understand what it was that I suffered from. You know, I had a lot of different things happen to me in my life. I grew up a certain way. There were certain behaviors that I learned that I believed shaped my thinking, my way of life. And as I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned that most of that had nothing to do with my drinking. What we're reading tonight, and as it was explained to me when I first came in here, is that this is a twofold disease, and it's an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. And this this doctor here, what a great help he was to Alcoholics Anonymous. He says a lot of things here. And the first part he says is that he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life. Who said that? Well, we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. I resemble that statement. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. I think for me personally, those were all true for me. I don't think every alcoholic is, but my experience is I was. But this portion where we start talking about our bodies were sickened as well. And in our belief, any picture of the alcoholic leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. You know, this whole thing with a mental obsession and an allergy of the body. You know, if I like cheesy poofs and I have a mental obsession, and all day long I go through work and I'm just craving some, I got to get home and have some, and I get home and I have some, and I'm like, that's delicious, you know? And then if I have this allergy to them and I get real, real sick, you know, I just stop eating cheesy poofs. It's pretty simple. But, when it comes to alcohol, I don't see the allergy. And without one, right, if I just have this allergic reaction to alcohol, I get real sick. I start drinking. I do some dumb shit. And the end, that's all she wrote. Never going to do that again. And it's the same thing with the mental obsession. You know, if I'm obsessing about drinking and I go home and all day long, all I can think about is drinking. All I can think about is drinking. And I make it through the day. First thing I do, as soon as I can, I have a drink. But I have no allergy. So what happens? Well, that was dumb. Pretty anticlimactic. So this theory, you know, and honestly, we still don't really know. I mean, later on, it's going to talk about a phenomenon. That's just some shit. We don't know what it is and we can't explain it. He was on to something. You know, when he starts talking about how later on, how he'd give us, like, he'd give a patient of his a date, which a deadline to meet something, right? And all of a sudden, the alcoholic starts drinking. And he knows he's not supposed to. I know I got a deadline. And then you know, a week later, when I pop back up, you know, if you ask me, well, and people would think, like, why do you keep doing that? Why in the world would you continue to do what you've been doing? I mean, I've heard that's insanity, but I think coming to a 12-step program and not taking the 12 steps is insanity. But this deal with this allergy. You know, people are allergic to shellfish. And unfortunately, I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I eat a lot of that shit. And if you ate it and you're allergic, you're probably going to swell up and die, possibly, if you don't get a shot. And I would look at you like, you idiot, you knew you were allergic to shellfish. This allergy that this doctor suggested is not quite the same. It doesn't look like anything. There's nothing we can put under a petri dish or a microscope and say, aha, there it is. And it is distinct. It only happens with people with alcoholism, this allergy that we're getting into. So my idea, you know, back in the day is this, you know, I like to drink a fifth of vodka. No, I don't. I just get thirsty. I never figured that out. So I go, man, it was that third shot. That's why I drank that whole bottle. I meant to do that. And it's just, it's this delusion, you know, that I can drink like other people. You know, first things first, who thinks about drinking all day? You ever told someone that doesn't drink that way? You think about drinking all day and then you want to cut out of work and to do that? They're like, oh, okay. I'm going to change my locks now, but okay. All right. You do you, boo-boo. And then you start to explain to them, well, I knew I had to be at work at 6 a.m., but, you know, I don't know where my car is. So, you know, there's that part. Well, what happened? We were drinking just the same. We just had a couple of drinks. And what happened was, rookie, you went home. And I started something that I have no control over. And that's the part for me that it made a lot of sense. You know, like the doctor says, you know, as laymen, as nobodies, just regular people. I'm not a doctor. As to its soundness, that explanation is X problem. Drinkers, it makes good sense. Because there's no, I've heard in meetings, like, if you want to get honest, you wanted to drink again. Like, it's some of those meetings and I'm like, oh, okay, that's where we're at. And it's like, no, that's not what I'm here for. If I wanted to quit drinking and I have a drinking problem, I just quit drinking. That's it. And if you can do that, sayonara, you don't need to be here. But what happens with me is over and over, I repeat this. Once I start, I can't stop. If I do stop, those intervals become brief and brief because this allergy starts to get the best of me. I cannot stay stopped. So that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bobby. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Morgan.
I have a sobriety date. It's November 15th, 2013. This is my home group. Happy to be here talking about step one with y'all tonight. For me, I bounced in and out of AA for years because people told me this was happening to me and I didn't want to believe them. I really thought that I was young, I was having fun, and that I could just stop when I wanted to stop. Except that proved to not be true every single time. And for me, I thought I could go on, drinking safely. I thought that was like the one thing that I could do safely. I thought everything else, I could see how all those drugs I was doing was a problem. I need to cut that out, but I can still drink safely. That's not really going to get me into trouble, except this is what happens when I start drinking. I say I have a beer, I have a shot, whatever. And something happens. It's like a switch is flipped in my mind. And everything is okay. You know, wasn't really that bad last time. I know I said that I would quit. I can go out tonight. I can just stop again tomorrow. And I'd be immediately back off to the races. All bets are off. When I start, I don't stop unless, you know, something intervenes. And I certainly can't stay stopped left to my own devices. So honestly, like the first couple times I read this, you know, in a rehab or whatever, it was borderline offensive because I thought that I'm pretty self-sufficient. I'm good at figuring things out on my own. And I, you know, this is just something that I'm going to grow out of. You know, I'm just in a weird phase. I'm a lot of stuff's been going on. If you had the life that I had, you know, and I grew up with amazing parents, you know what I mean? Like nothing was really wrong. It was all me, but when I'm drinking, I'm incapable of seeing that. You know, I most certainly did not want to think that I was maladjusted to life. I thought that I was just a victim to circumstance or, like everything is just happening to me. And really what it came down to, and I learned through actually working the 12 steps, is that I drank because it was my solution. I was maladjusted to life, you know? Like Bobby said, what happens for me, if I just had a problem with drinking, then I could stop and I could be okay. Except when I just stop drinking, I start to feel a little bit crazy. And that continues to get worse and worse. And I will act out in any sort of possible way I can to make myself feel better until I take that drink. You know, I can only hold on for dear life. I heard some people talk about, yeah, I did a year dry. I mean, I think my best is like 2 weeks, you know, and, you know, but I still would tell you that I'm, you know, I can stop anytime I want to. I think that's it for me for now.
Okay. Okay, thanks. The next part is part two. It's on page XXBII, three I's. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
Yeah, I think what we're alluding to here is this this deal with this allergy. And the action of alcohol in these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. That the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. You know, and I've heard someone explain it to me this way. You know, how many meetings you've been to? How many IOPs? How many inpatients? How many cars have you wrecked? How many divorces do you have? How much alimony do you have? How much child support do you have? How many things in your car do you have to blow in? How many times that happened that you've had installed in your car? Well, that's great. It doesn't make you an alcoholic. Even if the court says you got to come here, you know, even if you're in rehab and you come here, that doesn't necessarily mean you're an alcoholic. And to some of you who are probably going to get drunk later or listening, you're thinking, well, that's why, you know, because none of those things have happened to me. And I drank for 6 years. My sobriety date is September 2nd, 2021. I haven't had a drink since April 25th, 2005. Obviously, drinking's not the problem there. And when I came in AA, I was not like you people. And so if I'm not like you, then none of this matters. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's condense what it actually means for me. If you can talk to me about your 12 steps and a power greater than yourself, a phenomenon of craving, I'm a hopeless case. You know, I'm going to lose everything. You're not going to scare me. Your stories don't keep me sober because mine doesn't keep me sober. I get drunk right after I leave an AA meeting and when I'm in an IOP, you know. So what is it? What is it exactly that drives me to continue to do what I do? Why do I stand out in a crowd of people in a place in LSU basketball, football, and all this other crap where we make excuses to tailgate and just eat crawfish and get drunk all the time? You know, that was my culture, right? That's how I grew up. I learned that other people don't wait around for the actual game where people are tailgating and go steal their ice chest. They just go to the game, watch the game. But why is it that I think that's a good idea? Because I didn't pay for it, obviously. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit, they cannot break it. Once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, the problems pile up on them and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. And I put underneath there, so I'll try harder. And that's what I do. I don't ask for help. I try harder. Figure this out. Their self-confidence. I mean, I remember, you know, there's a distinct part of my drinking where I was like, this is getting really weird. I did not want to drink that cap full of bleach in that water, you know, and like some of the things that I've convinced myself to do to get away with my drinking and my shenanigans, just absolutely insane. It's just insane. And my reasoning when it comes to this, you know, it's like, well, you know, I was leaving. I was moving. I was 18. I was going away. I was in the Navy. Like I deserved to tie one on, you know, and I just told my mom, I'll be back. She's been asking me for 9 months to spend some quality time with her the night before. I was like, no, I'll be right back. I'll be right back. And what happens? You know, I have a couple of drinks and then that bottle's gone. And here we are again. And as far as the problems piling up on them, you know, I hear people talk about like, I'm just a piece of crap. Because I'm an alcoholic, so I lie and all this stuff. And I'm like, no, you don't run the market of being an idiot. You don't run the market of being selfish. You don't run the market. We don't, as an alcoholic, none of those things, you know, those are just character attributes that some people have more than others. I know a lot of people in AA, very kind. And like myself, without a spiritual program, you'd want to not let me know where your keys, you have a safe, if you have a credit card. That's just what I do when I start drinking. And I don't mean it, but this deal with the problems piling up on them. I think that And I believe that God gave me the gifts that I have, and they're different than everybody else's. But what starts to happen is I use those gifts in life, trying to figure stuff out. And I start to figure out to use them to my own benefit, to drink the way that I want to drink. And I don't know that I'm doing that. And I don't know I have this compulsion to drink. I don't even know what's going on. And once that stops working, those problems really pile up for me. You know, once the charm, once the funny, once the energetic person leaves the door and I come in again and I have done whatever it was I said I wasn't going to do again, then I'm in trouble. And then I come here and they're like, hey, your palate's over alcohol. Well, how do I fix that? You can't. You can't do, you just can't, you know, that's not what we do here. When I met my sponsor in 2005, he was sober 18 years. And I still remember this because I thought he was an idiot. He said, I've been sober 18 years. I haven't done anything about my drinking. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the other statement. Drinking stopped and left the conversation. And he said, I have done something about my spiritual condition. And later on, what I'm going to learn here is that if I have this reaction to alcohol, normal people do not have that reaction. You do not have to guess. You don't have to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You don't have to keep a plant alive for a year. You don't have to not make bad decisions. You can read the book and ask yourself, do I have this experience? Do I have a, but not an abnormal reaction when I start drinking? That's all I have.
That was good. I haven't heard that in a long time. I mean, it's been a long time since I've heard that. That's wonderful. All right. Yeah. So, you know, whenever I read this too, I think about, you know, there are some family friends that I've heard through my mom of just people that straight up stopped drinking. And, you know, they seemed like they got their lives together. They seemed like they could lead a normal and happy life. You know, and I can't classify them because I didn't really see it. And everybody, insert the person, you've probably heard this story before. You know, so-and-so quit drinking 10 years ago. They've been doing great, this and that. Why can't you stop? You know, that's because I have this phenomenon of craving. I don't know what that is when I get here. You know, and then it goes down to say, I mean, I'm like, damn, really? These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Once having the habit and found they cannot break it, you know, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. You know, I think about like all of the times where I thought that just if my parents would just leave me alone, things would get better. If, you know, if the roommate didn't suck so bad, you know, all these little itty, really looking back on them, little itty bitty problems that seemed like the biggest, most massive life events coming at me. You know, if all of that stuff would just go away, everything would be all right. And I had no way to solve them except try to double down even harder and figure it out. And I can't. I'm just thinking back on all of the times, you know, like you would think that if I just had a drinking problem, all of the times that I ruined a Thanksgiving dinner, you know, seeing my mom crying again, asking me how did it happen again, you know, you think that that stuff would make me stop. But the problem is, left to my own devices, I can't. I have this thing, you know. But it was for me to get to this point. You know, not for all of those people or my family telling me that I have this. I had to absolutely burn it into the ground to actually be able to read the words on these pages and say, damn, that actually makes sense to me. I remember reading this and thinking it was gibberish the first time that I was in a treatment center. I had no idea what I was looking at. Nothing here makes sense. My problems don't have to be astonishingly difficult to solve today. And I'm grateful for that. Thanks.
All right, thanks. All right, the third part of our five still comes from XXVIII. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, they cannot after time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking without impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules.
I think it's probably one of the most read paragraphs in the big book, and I didn't know what it meant, you know, when I came here. Everyone else was so excited about it. I was like, I'm not excited about that. I don't understand what it said. The sensation is so elusive that while admitted injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. Using big words here, I'm going to take them as disrespect because I don't understand. My sponsor says, I know what it does for me, but I don't know what it does to me. And that's what it means. Touche. All right. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And I mean, the things that I start to do around my drinking, getting around my drinking, drink some more to get what I want so I can drink, to start fights, to cause jealousy, to cause, you know, use deceit, whatever it is, that's completely normal for me. It doesn't even register in my mind that people don't do that. Generally, they don't do that. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. So what I hear is, why does Joe get to drink and get away with it? And why do I just want to punch Joe in the face today? He just looked at me stupid. I don't know what that is, you know? And I learned that that was irritable. My sponsor said, that's a restless, irritable, and discontent. What the hell is that, you know, 1938, 39 shit? You know, he said, restless. You ever gone somewhere? No, and as soon as you got there, that's where you had to go. And when, as soon as you got there, you had to leave because that's not where you were looking for? Yes, I think I've had that experience. Yeah, a lot of times. Irritable. You just told me about how some guy was playing his music loud and you were, you know, passed out in the back of someone's car because you'd been up for a couple of days and don't know why you were that. And you were also hungover. You got out of the car and spit in his face and then got back in the car and then drove off. You'd say you're pretty irritable. All right. I'm picking up what you're putting down. And discontented. You know, if it's that car, it's that girl, it's that relationship, it's that house, it's the job, it's the opportunity, it's whatever it is. It's getting in shape. Now I'm just fucking restless, irritable, and swole. And that doesn't do the trick either. So I'm discontented. So what I do? I stop doing that. Never finish that. Doesn't do the trick. Next shiny object until I can get drunk again. You know, and that's the way that I view the world. You know, through a completely different lens, how I operate in the world, you know, and people tend to wait their turn to do things. I don't. I'm impatient. I'm restless. I'm irritable. I'm all these things. See people accomplishing things in their life and doing things, right? And I'm thinking, well, how come he gets to be CEO? Because stupid, you you stock brakes at AutoZone and you're usually high when you're there and you don't really show up all the time. And sometimes you do, and you're still drunk. So, you know, that doesn't A to B kind of thing. You're not getting that, right? But in my mind, some way I'm being cheated out of this. Taking with impunity. We know that, you know, those hard drinkers piss you off. All right, man. I mean, I had a good weekend and it's Saturday and I got to go hang out and do something responsible. Deleting your number now. Desire again. The phenomenon of cravings. They pass through the well-known stages of esprit, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. Firm resolution. Many resolutions, never a decision. This is repeated over and over again. Unless this person can experience an entire cycle of change, there's very little hope of his recovery. So you're saying there's a chance. You know, define entire psychic change, by the way. I should have been a lawyer. On the other hand, strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, and I put this here, who doesn't understand? Me. Why? Because I'm reading the book. Why am I reading the book? Because I need a psychic change. I'm reading it and I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Here we go again with some gibberish. Once a psychic change has occurred, same person you seem doomed, all these problems we talked about that I can't do anything about, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. They're not my rules. They're not his rules. If you know someone that gives you rules, makes you sign a contract, has a certain time that you should call, and at 7:01 you've missed your time and you can try again tomorrow, you know, wake up and make your bed and all this other stuff. I'm not talking about that, man. I'm talking about these rules. And the only thing we have is the 12 steps. I don't see anything else in there that outlines as anything that says do this right here. What are we talking about? Any links? These links. we church it up however you want, but all I have to do is that. That's all I got to do. And once I start to do that, and as strange as it may seem to those who do not understand, I stay sober automatically. And that is the trick. That's how I got tricked in AAA. Because later on, holy shit, we're going to talk about the Sky Daddy and believing in him. All I have to know is that I have a problem I can't solve, and I'm reading this book with probably a complete stranger when I don't want to, the first time I'm reading it, and it's telling me that I just have to follow a few simple. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol, you know, and I remember coming in here and saying that, and the longer I've been around here, and I really realize more the effect that I like, at least in the beginning, and that effect that I constantly chased was that being able to breathe for the first time, it seemed like, you know, fear disappeared. I was confident. I was happy. I was content, you know, and the longer that I had gone on, all of that flip-flop on it stopped doing stuff for me and it started doing things to me. So yeah, I like the effect produced by alcohol, and I absolutely continued as long as I could, just thinking, you know, I got one last hurrah, maybe it's going to work again this time, you know? You know, I it's like right here, restless, irritable, discontent. That is how I feel when I don't have something in me, you know, that's how I feel the next morning after another night that I said I wasn't going to go out. And I did the same thing that made the same promise that I believed to be true and broke again. looking at my mom in her eyes, dead in her eyes, tears in her eyes, wondering what is wrong with this kid. And me kind of brushing it off like, you know, it's all right. It's going to be fine. Reassuring. Just to do it again. Yeah. So that sense of ease and comfort is what I was always seeking until I didn't get that sense of ease, you know, and that's what brings me here. And that's what brings me to reading this part of a book of the book with the sponsor. You know, yeah, the phenomenon of craving develops. When I start, I don't stop. When I put one in me, all bets are off. Emerging remorseful. Yep. Firm resolution. Check the box on that. It's not going to happen again, over and over and over, until I can experience an entire psychic change. All right, calm down. That sounds a little bit aggressive. You know, an entire psychic change. I don't know what that means when I get here. I have no idea. It says, well, if I don't have this, there's going to be little hope for my recovery. And so that's not super reassuring. So maybe I should look into what they're talking about here with this entire psychic change. How am I going to obtain that? And like Bobby said, it's all the pages that are after that, after this in this book. You know, and I need to have that psychic change. And for the longest time, I was the whole, you know, Sky Daddy thing kept me away from even giving AA a shot until I was beaten up so much that it actually sounded like a good idea. You know, I was like, I don't really have a better idea here. I really don't have a better idea here. Sitting in Virginia Beach jail, butt naked in a turtle suit in the suicide room, because I was at a high risk for a seizure. You know, the cops had bust into the house. You know, and I got swooped up 117 pounds when I got into jail, you know, and I mean, I'm not that big now. I've lost some weight. I'm about 90 pounds more than that now. So that's what it took for me. Really. It took to being on the absolute brink of death to saying, okay, maybe this entire psychic change they're talking about here is something that I can achieve. Or it sounded like something that I want to achieve. And thank God for the people that had like planted the seed in my head in all those meetings that I had been to, because people had always said, you need to get a sponsor, you need to work the steps. And I had a sponsor loosely at one point. loosely, yeah. He read the book. He did what a sponsor should. He read the book with me. But I didn't really pay much attention. And I said goodbye after he was like, yeah, let's just write this inventory. And, you know, because I thought I had a better idea. It really hadn't gotten bad enough yet. I was not fully convinced. Yeah, the very same person who seemed doomed, had so many problems, despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, you know, through getting with a sponsor and working through these steps. I don't have a desire to drink, you know, and I didn't think that that was possible. I truly did not think that that was possible. And there are a lot of people that I know from back in the day that have no idea how I am alive. Straight up, you know, like I've a lot of people in here have taken a meeting into a detox with me. A lot of the times, if it's in Virginia Beach, somebody I know is in that detox. Straight up. And they're like, if you can do it, I can do it. I'm like, yeah, this is what you have to do. Right here. I'm telling you, I told you the last three times I saw you in here, this is what I did, you know. This is exactly what I did, you know, and it's crazy because I like going through it. I don't even see that change in myself. All the people around me do, until, you know, it's like you blink your eye. And I mean, for me, I got sober when I was 20. I feel like I just grew up out of nowhere, And I certainly didn't think that I would live to see 21. So yeah, that's all I got. I'm rambling now.
All right. Thanks. Well, all right. The next part is 4. It's on page XXX. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates itself with these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence.
Yeah, I like the, all these and many others. And what they touch on is, you know, this phenomenon of craving. Why do we have it? You know, there's different types of alcoholics. Some of them are outside of the scope. Let's see. They are always going on the wagons for keeps, over remorseful, make many resolutions, never decision. Forgot where I read that. There's a type of a man who's unwilling to admit that he cannot take a drink. He plans various ways of drinking, changes his brand or his environment. There is a type who believes after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time that he can take a drink without danger. Then there's the manic depressive type. There are types entirely normal in every respect, except in the effect alcohol has upon them. They're often able, intelligent, friendly people. All those people and some have one thing in common. So if you thought you were just a special little snowflake, we just fit you in that paragraph. If we didn't cover you. If you have a phenomenon of craving, if you can't drink and not have this phenomenon developing, then you have a problem that you probably can't solve. And like it says earlier, you know, this doctor, man, you know, one of the things that was brought to my attention is like, you ever heard of a specialist? That means they know stuff, right? Podiatrist, you know? Specialty in delivering babies, right? No, that's feet. Right? He knows what he's talking about. He's a specialist of alcoholic and drug addiction. And he was in one of the most renowned hospitals around. And he came up. I mean, there was a lot of people who helped with the spiritual angle and how we're going to, you know, enter that whole thing. But when it came to the physical allergy and the obsession of the mind, this guy said, I think you have this, but I have no idea how to treat you. No idea. It's outside the scope of anything I know how to do. And that's what's so crazy is this deal is what he would witness in working with people. And he talks about it earlier in the chapter. And he says, there's a type of alcoholic who responds well to this, the whatever treatment, physical exercise, all that BS, right? And then there's the type who does not respond at all. And that's what we're talking about right here. It sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which you're familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. You know, that's like a death sentence if you're an alcoholic. And you define entire. I mean, you're not like suggesting that I never drink again, right? Like ever. Like ever, right? I mean, and I talk to people and they're like, yeah, you know, once I'm done with this court case and I get this thing uninstalled in my car, you know, maybe one day when I'm married and, you know, maybe when I own my own business. And And guess what? All those things happen for them. And then they get drunk and lose it all again. And most of them, from my experience, what I observe is they may come back. They may, but most of them don't get sober again. And what I didn't know that when I came here, I was like, I'm going to get sober. My life sucks so bad that I can't even kill myself. Got like 8 lives left. You know, I can't kill myself. I won't die. That's how I got sober. I won't die. And I came to AA, you know, and there was no other options for me. But this idea, right, that yeah, I can control it. Oh, one day I'll, you know, maybe moderate and all that. If it doesn't work, I'll just come pick up a white chip. It's like, that's not how it works. That is not how it works. you don't get to, I didn't get to decide what was going to happen when I started. And there was all sorts of sweet promises and values and whatever that was inside me, a little moral compass, a little quiet voice inside me that says, how could you do that? And I have no explanation except I come in AA and I hear you people talk like I talk, except you had a solution. You understood the way that I felt and the things that I did, and you didn't even know me. How does that work? I had people, you know, when I always try to look at it from the context of me reading this book myself, you know, the first time, or reading with someone else who doesn't understand. I didn't understand when I came here. I love to hear people say, I knew I was an alcoholic when I was 15 years old. Really? Tell me about that phenomenon of craving that you had when you were 15. What? How was I going to know that? How was I going to know that I was fooling myself, that I had this obsession of the mind, right? How was I supposed to know that without being introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous? Most people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't know they have that until they get here. Shit, some of them still don't know. Just don't drink, you know? That's not my experience. It's not my experience. You know, it just irritates me when people say that, entire abstinence. And again, that's like a sentence to me. You know, I remember my first IOP I went to. I won't even get into that, how many drugs I was doing. And on that whole allergy, you know, you talk about people coming in and they can't talk about drugs. I'm going to talk about drugs. I'm going to give you this. You smoke a lot of weed, you're probably going to eat some Fruit Loops. That's my physical allergy, whatever you want to call it. Going to order some Domino's at 2 o'clock in the morning. I smoke some meth. My house is going to be clean. I do some coke, your wallet's going missing. And I'm going to talk a lot and come up with a lot of good, great ideas to save the world. You know, I do some mushrooms and I'll believe that I am at one with the universe. And I drink and I might do all of that and I might do none of that. I have no idea what is going to happen. Anything and everything is up for grabs. And I don't want that to be the case, because I don't want to be that distinct entity. Because if that means I'm the distinct entity, then the solution is entire absence. And that just is it's unfathomable to me when I'm still drinking. I'm glad that someone actually explained that. You know, they didn't tell me, well, you can never drink again. All right, I'll see you later. Bob, poke your tires when I'm leaving the meeting. Tell me what I can't do. But this whole thing, you know, I don't want to get too far on a tangent. When I came into AA, you know, I didn't come into AA on the SART bus. I came into NA, right? Because I'm just an addict. I'm just crazy. And my sponsor said, tell me about your drinking. And I'm like, well, you know, I binge drink. Yeah, I don't drink all the time. Well, how much do you binge? Well, I mean, you know, fifth of vodka, you know, over the weekend. That's a lot. So how do you manage to do that over the weekend? Oh, I didn't say I did that all over the weekend. I meant every day on the weekend. See, you got to read between the lines when you're talking to an alcoholic, you know. And so when I told him, like, hey, I accidentally smoked crack a couple of times. The Navy apparently disapproved of that, and they found out. And he's like, well, I can tell you two things. One, they should kick you out. By the way, you're a liability. And two, that doesn't mean that you're a drug addict. That means you made some bad decisions. But if you're an alcoholic, you'll probably be able to quit all those things. And in the back of your mind, you'll be checking into an IOP like me, about to go into DTs, thinking, what did this thing say? I hereby agree that I will abstain from alcohol during this treatment. Okay. And think to yourself, what a bunch of idiots. Who runs this place? I could run this place. Because obviously you don't think I'm going to quit drinking, do you? I mean, I might try to quit on some of this other stuff for a little while. But, you know, when it comes to drinking, of course, I mean, that's not even the problem. Always in the back of my mind that somehow, some way, I can just kind of wiggle my way through the cracks and figure something out until I can. Thanks. That's all I have.
Thanks.
Yeah, I most certainly was the type that who was unwilling to admit that I couldn't take a drink. You know, like I thought that very much like Bobby, I came in via a different program on a couple of occasions. You know, but really what it came down to is for me is like I would start drinking. That phenomenon of craving hits, I'd keep drinking, and somehow that needle just appeared in my arm again every single time, like daily. And I don't know how that happens, you know, and really it did take somebody talking to me pretty much in the same way. It's like, what happens when you drink? I'm like, well, of course I'm going to keep drinking. I'm going to get drunk. Like that's what we're achieving. That's what we're trying to achieve here. Right. What's the point? I have no idea what it's like to just drink a couple. I'm going to drink what's available. And then anything else that's going to just get added on top, you know? And like, yeah, it sounds like you have alcoholism. I'm like, oh, okay. That kind of changes things, I suppose. You know, and I will say this, since I've treated the alcoholism, the needle doesn't magically appear in my arm. You know, isn't that wild? That's pretty wild to me, you know. So I absolutely have this phenomenon of craving. When I start drinking, all bets are off. And I really have no idea what's going to happen next. All I do know for a fact today is that I am going to keep going until, you know, family convinces me to go to rehab again. You know, the heat's on my back. I gotta run. Maybe jail will intervene again. Maybe I'll crash the car into the tree again. You know, all that stuff. That's what it looks like for me. That is the kind of thing that has to intervene in order. I can't stay stopped, left to my own devices. And then, you know, they're going to offend me here and say we don't really have a treatment for this. The only relief we've got is entire abstinence. Shit. So I got to actually stop everything, you know? Luckily, we'll start talking about over the next 13 weeks, all of that other stuff to be happy and content, because that's what I was looking for. Happiness, contentment, all those feelings that I had that first time that I took a drink could be achieved by just doing something.
Thanks. All right. This last part five is coming from page 152. We'll spend a couple minutes each on it. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some of the righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you.
See what you did there. Jumped over to 152. Talked about how messed up we were in the doctor's opinion. Yeah, so I have to, you know, this whole thing of how we've shown how we got from under. Because, listen, IHOP is great. Not really, in my opinion. Your coffee sucks. I appreciate that it's free, because I'm probably jobless and homeless when we get here. What do you have? What do you actually have besides going to these meetings? I thought my life was over, you know, where I should be stupid, bored, and like some righteous people. Yeah. I mean, if I didn't immediately know, and that was the whole thing for me in my experience, and this is what I try to emulate to other people. What was it like when I first came in? This isn't rocket science. We're not talking about, you know, how we're going to cure this, right? Not reinventing the wheel. What worked for me? I wasn't told that I had to do anything. I came up with that myself. My sponsor described to me restless, irritable, discontent,
He talked to me about the need for ease and comfort, which he explained to me. I get that from many, many ways, not just drinking. Drinking does the trick. Now, the difference is working with this, you know, what do you have to offer? We are a glum lot. Tell me my life would have a whole, I would have a whole different experience. He didn't tell me I was going to have a lot of money. He didn't tell me anything. He didn't tell me if I was beautiful, that my hair wouldn't fall out. Didn't promise me any of those things. He said, by taking these 12 steps, when I take these, live by these spiritual principles and take these actions, I get ease and comfort. It's maybe not as fast as drinking a shot, but it comes. And how will I get that? How will I ever figure that out? You know, I have to be willing. I have to be willing to go to any lengths. You know, part of that, you know, that question of talking with an alcoholic, you know, do you want what we have? How do I know what you have? Because I heard you say you had a nice car, that your family let you back in the house. I got to read, and I have to use my own experience. I have to relate in. You know, I'm not here because I'm dumb. I'm actually highly intelligent. That's what fucking confuses people. It really just racks their brain how someone like myself, who has such character and potential, it's my favorite AA word, potential. Why do you continue to behave the way that you do? And I find a group of people who say, this is what we got. And I see them talking about accidentally smoking crack and hearing people like David Francis talk about, it won't further my career. I thought that shit was hilarious the first time I heard it. It's like, yeah, it didn't further my career. You know, I saw people talking about their own experience, not to one up someone and say, yeah, but you know, when I was drinking, it's like, no, it's to be useful. It's to be helpful. It's to be kind. It's to be considerate. It's to reassure someone that the condition that they suffer from, yes, it is something very distinct, but our experience is collectively is unique, is that is what brings us together. But what keeps us together is the fact that I can help my fellow man, woman, whoever, my brother, my sister, however you want to say it, fellow member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you have a way out. The substitute that I have is the fellowship. Oh, I'm going to get on my soapbox for a second. The fellowship is not hanging out. I'm sorry. I don't know how many times I have to say this. It's not playing kickball. It's not going to the beach. It's not hanging out and playing board games, you know, every weekend. I used to do a lot of that stuff. It had never solved any of my problems. In fact, a lot of them got worse when I was doing those things. Because what I began to do is I got confused and I substituted those things for working the steps. See, there is no fellowship if I don't get recovery. The fellowship exists only from my understanding that I'm drowning and I take that life raft, and the only way I get to keep it is to share it and give it to someone else. And that's the substitute for me. There is a sense of belonging that I have. Your imagination will be fired. Most satisfactory years of existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. And that's my only aim. I don't get people sober. I have yet to get a single person sober. I have tried to be effective working with other people and trying to come from an attitude of not holier than thou. It talks about no axes to grind, none of that stuff, and just explain what it was like for myself and to finally become a part of something. And one of the things that my sponsor said, which I still didn't understand, and I really didn't like the guy for a while, he said, in order to become a part of, you must act as a part of. It took a little minute for me to, you know, get my little pea brain going in the right direction. And I was like, yeah. What is a sober member of Alcoholics of the Fellowship act like? They gave of their time and they seemed to enjoy it. And what was crazy is that when they told me to do the same thing for someone else, is that I still didn't my problems didn't disappear. It's just that my life took on new meaning. So my life is no longer centered around what do I get out of it? Things happen to me like the rest of the world. Life happens, but I find meaning and purpose, which I never had. You can have a lot of stuff. I got stuff sober, got a lot of things sober that I put a lot of emphasis on, and I forgot what I really had until I almost lost it. And I'm very grateful for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I consider today the only thing that kept me back into the rooms when I went back out wasn't because I was funny, wasn't because I'm a nice guy, is that I had worked with other alcoholics and had a huge network of people. And even when I wasn't sober coming to AA, people were still loving and patient and tolerant with me, regardless of my condition at that time. And that is something that just blows my mind, because when I was in it, I was like, I don't belong here again. I wasn't a part of the fellowship, but I was welcome back in. So that's all I had.
Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. Are we on time?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Probably not. You're sitting next to me.
All right. Yeah. So we've shown how we got out from under, you know, and, like I truthfully thought that when I came here, that my life was going to be over, you know, every bit of fun is just going to be sucked out of me, even though I honestly can't say I was having fun for a long time, you know, like I didn't really know what that meant. You know, so it's kind of funny looking back on that stupid, boring and glum. No, absolutely not. You know, like I came here. I went through the 12 steps with a sponsor, and I had an experience. I had an experience where I became content and happy in my own skin, which is something that I didn't know I could achieve. Y'all told me, but I thought you were lying, honestly. You know, yes, there is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, like Bobby said, through working with people, meeting people here, some of the same interests. Yeah, I've got a great group of friends, but that's not going to keep me sober alone. You know, cause I went through a phase too. I tried to do that before I moved here. I was just solely, come on, let's just be friends. You know, like there's a lot of work I need to do still, but let's just be friends. And that only got me suicidal. You know, there's three legs to the triangle for a reason. I know we're running late on time. I just want to say thank you all. Thank you, Bobby. It's been great being up here with you. Love y'all. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. At this time, we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. It's got for your phone, if you want to pay by PayPal or Venmo, it's in there or whatever. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contribution covers each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person to contribute to fostering a secure and welcome environment in which our meetings can take place. At this time, does anybody have any AA announcements?
Bobby Alcoholics.
Bobby B.
My home group, Candlelight, is going to have a fifth Friday this month. And fifth Fridays for us means we usually just eat a bunch of crap and have an excuse to do so. So this fifth Friday is the 29th, 7 o'clock. We're going to have some food. We might have gumbo. We might. I'm just going to tease y'all until you come. And then we also have a speaker, and that will be Tater. Tater's going to be telling his story at 8 p.m. So 7 o'clock, food, 8 p.m., lies. Please come out and join us.
That's good. Any other announcements? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Okay. Literature is available. If you can fold it, it's free. If the books, you can see one of the home group members or myself. We'll be up here after the meeting. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me, or if you're online, you can go to info@simpleactions.net and you can send a request. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside the door out here to stay well away from the church. All meeting audio recordings, upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting, all are invited to and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, and that'll be held at Stella's down off of Colonial, right, all the way down. Mm-hmm. All right. And real quick, how about another thank the panel again, Bobby and Willie. Okay, and then let's see, I got.
Asking your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Okay, thanks. I will close. If you would join us for the Lord's Prayer, and then afterwards, if you want to talk to someone at panel, please help us out.
Who brought us here? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, and thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and glory.